This episode of The Bladder Presents is brought to you, in part, by Kristen D., Jennifer H., Carolyn, and Megan H. Thanks, guys. You can join The Bladder Presents tipster team at patreon.com/bladderpresents for bonus episodes, book reviews, and much more. And now, the episode.
Because even with good people, even with people that you can kind of trust, if the truth is inconvenient, if the truth doesn't, like, fit, they don't believe it.
I'm as big a true crime property title specificity truther as anyone, but I'll make an exception for Netflix's 8-part docudrama Unbelievable, which more than earns the, well, broadness of its name, if you'll excuse that expression. And it really is unbelievable. We'll be talking about that series, plus the newest podcast from Parcast, the similarly vaguely titled Sports Criminals, and it is also unbelievable in its way. But on this you can rely. This is The Blotter Presents, episode 113. Welcome back to The Blotter Presents, a podcast about the true crime that's worth your time. Or not. But we'll get into it. Please welcome returning guest Annabeth Chow. Hello, PL.
Hello, PL. How are you?
I am good. Yeah, I feel like we're the last people to be talking about Unbelievable on Netflix, but I could talk about it for weeks. It's that good. Let's get into it in our Most Wanted section. Here's the case file from Netflix's landing page. Quote, when a teen reports being raped, then recants her story, two female detectives follow evidence that could reveal the truth based on a true story. End quote. That could not be any bare bones summary. It fails to include that Marie, the teen, hardly recanted spontaneously. She was emotionally bullied into doing so by a couple of middle-aged white cops who couldn't be bothered to make sense of inconsistencies in her accounts of the assault. She was also sold out by a foster mom who thought Marie reported the rape to get attention. That summary also doesn't begin to describe the work of the two detectives, here Karen Duvall and Grace Rasmussen, who painstakingly pursue a serial rapist several states away, their paths only crossing with Marie at the end, or the work of this series, which also painstakingly portrays both various aftermaths for Marie and various procedural frustrations for the cops. It's infuriating. It's weirdly hopeful at the same time. Everyone involved needs to start clearing off mantle space for their Emmys. Annabeth, did you watch all 8 episodes of this?
Yes, I watched all 8 episodes and did not get up from my sofa the entire time, I think, except to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And I haven't done that in a long time.
Yeah, this is just really good work. The pacing is perfect. The acting is amazing. We'll get into all that stuff later, but I think my biggest note is how few notes I actually took. Like, for almost 8 hours of material,
yeah,
usually
exactly,
I would have like 12 to 15 pages of like just notes, questions, places that I wanted to pull clips. After a while,
yes,
I just stopped.
I have like 2 pages.
Yeah. Because it's like, what can you say about this like almost perfect egg of a show?
Yeah, there was one teeny thing that I did not like, and that's it. Everything else was beautiful.
What is the teeny thing?
So at the beginning of 2 of the episodes, they did this weird sort of like, where they would have a scene playing, and then they would have all this sort of crosstalk from other interviews and other, I guess, scenes of the show. And it was so just overwhelmingly stimulating that I did not enjoy that. And I thought it could have been used to a better effect. I'm not exactly sure how, but I did not like that. And I also didn't really understand why they only did that for 2 of the episodes.
Yeah, the editing, I thought, mostly was extremely well considered. They, whenever the victims of this serial rapist were being asked to relive or review or recount for the umpteenth time what happened, right, they would cut in one of the victims' flashbacks to the event, which began to wear on me emotionally, which is how I knew that it was doing what it was supposed to do. That I was right, like, I wish they'd stop that. It's so tough to take. And then I'm like, shut up, Sarah.
Right. No, like, that's exactly what it's supposed to be doing.
That's the point.
Yeah.
I would also add that this feels very emotionally true and responsible. It doesn't mm-hmm. go into like victim porn territory. It only shows you or brings you back to what you need to try to walk alongside all these people.
Right.
But it's also a really good procedural.
It really is. And I kept reading the when I was reading reviews, I kept reading the phrase buddy cop. And I was like, yeah, I mean, it is sort of, but it's so well done that it doesn't feel like, I don't know, Law and Order SVU, for example.
Yeah, which is really not easy to do.
Exactly.
I mean, we have a couple of clips that I think illustrate the clever and elegant ways in which they impart information to the reader that would normally be pretty obvious to the characters. But first, you asked for a clip from pretty early in the series involving this sort of turning point for the cops dealing with Marie's case. Do you want to hear the clip first?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's clip two.
My point is, I know about this. And given the way she was acting and everything else, I don't know, it just all felt
off.
And then those weird details. He brought a blindfold, but nothing to tie her with. Would a shoelace even hold her? And then that thing about him taking the picture.
What about it?
Well, just hypothetically. Say she's gotten herself into a situation with some boy, and there is a compromising picture out there, or she thinks there might be.
Are you saying you think Marie made up the attack?
I mean, this lady, she did, and I know it's based on a true story, so okay, real person, you did everything wrong at every turn.
Yeah,
she really did. From the way that she interacted with the police and basically started all of this bullshit, to the way that she interacted with Marie, which was like anything wrong that you can say to a teenager who has been raped, she did, and I hated her. So
yeah. And yet, you completely believe, I don't know if people are really talking about this performance from Elizabeth Marvel, but I mean, I always love her, and she is perfect here because she absolutely believes that she's doing the right thing.
Yes.
And there is this aspect to it. We will link in the show notes to the ProPublica reporting around the story, and I mean, I think in real life, this woman's name is Peggy, that she was just like, well, you know, I look back at this recent picnic where I felt she was displaying attention-seeking behavior, like...
Right.
Who...
Like, she's 17 years old, she's a foster kid, she's been through a shit ton, you know, like, whatever, she's dancing on a table. I mean, I understand there were children around, but she, and you're right, like she was so unsympathetic to me, but then at times I was like, well, you know what? I don't know how I would have acted. I might have done the same thing and made the same stupid mistakes, but she just continued to make stupid mistakes over and over and over.
Well, and to like, she doesn't wait for the cops to come to her and say,
right,
this story isn't lining up. What do you think? She's like, well, I'd like you to know that I think she's lying, but don't tell her I told you.
Right, exactly.
Like, you know what? If you're going to sell her out like that, put your name on the tag.
Oh, yes.
But the performance is really, like, she doesn't sell it out at all. She just sits in that wrongheadedness and isn't too big for it. I mean, all the performances are amazing.
Incredible. Yeah.
And the
no, she's
know.
So good. She's like so perfectly brittle.
Oh God.
The entire time, you know. I loved it.
Yeah.
But I hated her.
And I also, I mean, I extra hated the one cop, not the one who ends up sort of apologizing at the end for not believing her, but
right.
the
other one who was like so mean.
Yeah. Oh my God. And it's just like, fine, let's take a polygraph right now. And she, you're just sitting there, and the way she's shot, like from under the table where she's just looking at her lap and she's crying, and it's like, this isn't the first time or even the 12th time that she's been made to feel like this. And especially after everything that we as true crime consumers have learned in the last, I'm going to say 3 to 5 years, about how easy it is to coerce a confession or a recantation or,
right,
as you know, and with adolescents, how easy it is to sort of move them towards what you want said to make your case.
Yes.
This
right.
was agonizing to watch. Here's clip 3.
I'm going to tell you a version that does fit together, okay? A young woman, been through a ton of bad stuff, on her own for the first time, just broke up with her boyfriend, feeling isolated, lonely, might, on the spur of the moment, come up with something without thinking it through. That would get her the attention she needs. Because you haven't gotten enough attention in your life. I can see that. You haven't been cared for or protected. And that's not your fault.
So, Marie, tell us. We need to know. It's our job. Is there really a rapist running around that we should be looking for?
The amazing thing about how that is written and directed for the first cop who's talking, who is the less bad guy. I mean, he's still terrible,
right,
but that sort of like makes it worse because he should know better. And you can tell that he does on some
yes.
level when he's looking at the pictures. Mm-hmm. But the way he's shot, the way it's written, there's this very soothing, like, let me tell you what probably happened. And
mm-hmm.
partway through the speech, I, the viewer, was like, you get how this works. Like, you
yeah.
understand how this has its effect. Because he's very soothing. He's
mm-hmm.
presenting. It's not judgmental. And you're just
like, he's giving her basically an out, right? I mean, he's
yeah.
giving her an excuse to say, okay, I didn't do this.
And
I made this up.
Yeah, and if what she really wants is for the interaction with the situation to end, regardless of how that is effected, of course she's
yes.
going to be like, fine, you're right.
Right.
Because
when she even says
over.
It a later.
Yeah,
yeah, she was like, I was so tired. They kept, you know, telling me basically I could go home if I just do this, and that's what she did. And, you know, I would definitely probably be the same way.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be like, all right, yeah, sure. Okay, I made it all up.
And the,
bye.
Yeah, the scripting up to that point, this is still in the first episode, but the scripting up to that point has made it clear that she has been through this story, not to mention
70 billion times.
Yeah, the collection of the evidence during the rape kit at the hospital, which they do an excellent job conveying how long that takes and how much is going on and
mm-hmm.
How kind of dehumanizing it is and how she sort of rushed through the, like, here are the things you have to take to make sure
right.
that on top of everything else, this monster didn't impregnate you or give you a disease.
Exactly. Yes. And it's such a good example of, you know, you'll see in the later episodes how you're supposed to do these things. But, you know, in the first episode, it's just the whole episode is an example of how not to do these things.
Yeah.
You know,
and then you get to Karen Duvall, Merritt Weaver, who needs to
marry me.
Yeah. Or just come and give me every kind of bad news, big or small. It's just like,
exactly,
Sarah, I'd like to talk
yes.
to you about the fact that your tire pressure is irregular. Like, Thank you. I'll just like start crying, like, oh, finally someone has come to talk to me about this.
I know. I read a tweet that basically was like, if there is a God, I hope that they have the voice of Merritt Weaver when I get to heaven.
I mean, she's amazing. I'm going to play clip 4 and then we can discuss.
Okay.
I want to talk to you about physical evidence. Every rape has 3 crime scenes. The location of the assault, the body of the attacker, and the body of the victim. Each of them can offer up important information. Now, the hospital will do a thorough exam of your body, but would you be comfortable with me trying to collect DNA evidence from your face now?
Yeah. But like I said, he made me shower and wash my face.
I understand. Still, I'd like to check.
Okay. There is so much going on here. This is functioning as character work, that you see how Duvall deals with victims.
Right.
This is a gentleness in Weaver's acting and a thoughtfulness. There are a lot of choices that you are accustomed to seeing made by actors playing this kind of role. I'm thinking of SVU.
Mm-hmm.
Not particularly positively. And look, those people have to film 24 episodes a year, and they're not being given great writing, and I get it. But this is like just a level up from that autopilot that you're used to seeing in these scenes.
Right.
And it's an example of how the show finds ways to exposit procedure for civilians who are watching without you even necessarily realizing that it's
happening. That's what they're doing. Yes.
I didn't have any clips involving Elias the intern, but that was I was like 20 minutes into his existence before I realized what he was there for. And it was like, oh,
exactly.
The rookie.
Oh, they're explaining. Oh, okay. I get it. I did the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is masterful.
Yeah.
This is wonderful. Like, take notes, anybody who ever wants to write a television episode.
It's, you know? Yeah. And on top of that, you're used to these prestige shows. Like, they'll take the full hour or like an hour and 5 minutes. And these were uniformly like 42 to 50 minutes long. They didn't do anything they didn't need to do.
Right. No, it was so streamlined, and just the way that they did every single thing, even cutting back and forth, you know, between Buddy Cop and Marie. I thought it was beautifully, beautifully done.
And Marie sometimes the sequences, especially when she has recanted and she's just been basically put on a social ice floe by her job and her where she lives, which is like, it's not exactly a group home, but they're sort of transitioning out of foster living to living on their own. Her therapist, her foster parents from the past. When Brent Sexton is like, the thing is, you and I can't be alone together anymore.
Oh, I mean, heartbreaker.
Just so sad.
It was so sad. And there was a point where she's talking to the therapist and she's describing Zombieland to the therapist.
Yeah.
Oh, that was such a metaphor.
It really was. And that was the great Brooke Smith, who didn't get enough to do. I would watch a spinoff of like all the, you know, court ordered therapy subjects who come to her.
Oh my gosh, so would I.
Thanks for like the way she said thank you for trusting me. I almost sobbed. I mean,
yeah, I know. Oh,
yeah.
I want her to be my therapist. She and Merritt Weaver. Can they just come to my house?
Yeah,
and talk to me about stuff.
And then we'll drink beer and fix cars with Grace.
Oh, of course.
Best ponytail on TV. Also,
best ponytail when she was running the way it swung.
I know.
Oh.
Maddening, actually. I have another short clip that is a good exemplar of Weaver's just making choices that, like, she's sort of, you know, listening to the character and listening to the writing and doing what needs to be done instead of what is usually done. Here's clip 5.
He used it to tie her up. Her own hair ribbon. He brought it for that purpose.
That's fucked up.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it's a little, it doesn't exactly translate to an audio medium, but she also has, as Duvall, like, occasionally there's this nodding that mm-hmm. she does where she's trying to either reinforce something for herself or, like, self-soothe in a way.
Right. Yes.
That she, agree. I have seen her do this before. I mean, I have always loved Merritt Weaver. I think she's great. And it's funny that there's that. She chose that bit of business mm-hmm. to bring to this role of a woman who is like, this is one of the most secure people I think I've ever seen on screen. And it's really quite nice, particularly that they're women and that there's just not mm-hmm. a lot of apologizing being done or like, but she's broken. Like, you know what? Once you've watched all of Prime Suspect and you've seen that Helen Mirren has owned this entire waterfront.
Right.
Why not do something else? Like, make everyone functional. Great.
Well, and there's an article that I think, I can't remember where it was. Anyway, it's called, like, A Miserable Walk with Merritt Weaver or something like that. And she talks about how she thinks that she's, like, constitutionally incompatible with acting because she always is afraid she's going to get fired or she's going to do a terrible job. And I'm like, girl, you have nothing to worry about because every single thing she does, I think, is brilliant.
Yeah.
So, and I had only seen her in Nurse Jackie before. I've never seen her in anything else, so...
I can't even remember what else I've seen her in. I wasn't a Nurse Jackie watcher, but every time I'm like, mm-hmm. should I dip into that show? And I'm like, oh yeah, I should. Because I'm pretty sure Merritt Weaver has won hardware for that role.
Just
right?
to see the way that she is so also so good at comedic acting. You should watch it.
Yeah, she has a beautiful voice. She's welcome to read every audiobook that I listen to and come on this podcast and just sing to me. I don't know. Is there anything she can't do? She definitely won't do that. The next clip is, I'm going to play it. And then, AB, I was wondering what you thought of this sequence. Here is clip 6.
Happens all the time now. Girls making all these claims, it's a thing. There's status to being a victim, which is bullshit, because there are real victims out there, and when you go around saying you have been victimized when you haven't, it just makes it harder for those people who really do need help.
Mm-hmm.
And then guys like me, normal guys, end up getting accused of all kinds of crazy stuff.
Like what else?
What do you mean?
You said all kinds of crazy stuff. What other accusations have there been against you?
No, none. Why? Did somebody say something?
About what?
I mean, Merritt again.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the way that she sort of unspooled this and like pulled on those threads, it was like when somebody says something, you know, offensive or racist or whatever, and you're like, huh, I don't understand. Can you explain that to me? And then they get really weird about it.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it felt to me. But he was also just like, whatever, you know, your standard like Twitter reply guy.
Yeah. And also just that like Brock Turner rapey Joe College fuckstick that the writing gets him to show every micron of his ass.
Yeah.
But there is no justice served him. And then he just disappears from the narrative because that's how it fucking goes for that guy. And
yeah, that's exactly how it goes. And nothing is ever going to happen to him.
And I marked the clip because I thought it was like it came right up to the line of being not a straw man, but like just a little too perfect and how self-pitying and privilege-y it was. But the fact that she's just sort of like, oh, is that right? And is sort of, you know, standing there with this file looking right at him.
She's like, about what?
About what? And that was like the way she popped that tea. I was like, yep, she's as close to killing someone right now as she's going to get. And then, yep, you know, this chode just disappears. Goes back to GHB and thinking he's the tits, because that's right how it goes 95% of the time.
Yes, exactly. Ugh. Bye, Chad.
Yeah, bye. I could talk about the examples of like writing that other shows like would try to get away with and fail, that I would be like 15 minutes past something and be like, wait, how did that work? How'd they do that? How'd they get it past someone who still hate watches SVU so that she can hammer on shit like this all the time?
Right. Well, and so the showrunner of this was Susanna Grant, right?
Correct.
Who has done some other good stuff, but I was actually really surprised to see that Michael Chabon, I don't know how to say his last name, Chabon, and Ayelet Waldman, who has been multi-problematic in her lifetime, were co-showrunners on this. So,
and they wrote several of the episodes. Lisa, yeah, is it Chodolenko or Choladenko? It's Choladenko, right? I feel like I always say one and then it's the other one. Let's go with Choladenko since it doesn't start with Chode. So she directed several episodes. There's just a like elegance and sureness to the writing and the directing, which is not showy, but also helpful. Like the way that things are shot sometimes, you'll see this in one of the pictures that I have in the visual aids. You can see those on Twitter and Facebook. That's at Blotter Presents all across social media. They shoot from behind Tony and Merritt to this, you know, identikit, which is complete, like it's unhelpful horseshit because he has a mask. So it's just his eyes and they're just looking at it. And the way the sketch is both shot and literally drawn, he's like a little bit smirky. And you could just see like one shoulder of Tony Collette just sags a little bit. And
yeah,
just the way that they never lose sight of like what the story is trying to do, which is not to draw attention to like the beautiful writing or like here's a drone shot. I just have enormous respect and admiration for this, and like it's not really rewatchable because it's
no
roof stoof,
right?
But this is a series like, that can get away with including multiple conversations about faith when it comes to crime and the choices that a God who may or may not exist is making in terms of human suffering. Like, do you want to let Warren Leight have a shot at that over on NBC? Because I'm pretty sure I don't. Like, bless his heart, he's good at what he does, but he's not going to get by with this.
Right. No, and it's, you know, making television is hard no matter what you're making. And to make it look so easy.
Yes.
Is sort of a feat in and of itself, because it's not easy. You know, I'm so, so thankful to have been able to watch this, honestly. I know that's very twee, but it's true.
Well, in our last clip, first we have one of the tech support folks working with the cops who is really getting pissed now that they can't get any closer to this guy. And then we basically segue into a discussion of sacred geometry. How many shows? Exactly one. Here's clip 7. Yep.
We may not know his name yet or what he looks like, but give me 24 hours, I'll be able to tell you what shoes and gloves he owns.
Starting to get an outline of him.
Can't put an outline in custody.
You ever hear of sacred geometry?
What's
the belief that things like a honeycomb or a snowflake, those perfect shapes found in nature, are proof of organization by higher power.
That's not a honeycomb. It's just a glove made by a greedy American corporation, which is definitely a higher power, but probably not the kind you mean.
It's hard to believe that I only had one clip with the great Toni Collette in it.
I know.
I would like to say there is a scene at the end where she's like sort of victoriously treating herself to fixing the rearview mirror in one of her and her husband's old like vintage car projects.
Yeah.
And he's like, slide over, and he's sort of giving her a hug. And the process that the character is going through of deciding to let herself cry is really something.
There
is
see.
No part of making of like scripted storytelling that is easy. Like Vince Gilligan said, even the shittiest thing you ever saw was miserably hard to make,
right?
But I mean, like sometimes you look at acting choices and you're like, no, or like, why weren't you directed better? Why did you have so much Botox? Like this.
And I've seen her, you know, in my mind, she has been over the top in the past.
Yeah.
In other roles, as wonderful as she is, but the restraint, I guess, that she showed in this character was amazing. It was so, so good. And I wonder if it has a little bit to do with Merritt Weaver, honestly.
Could be. Although we have seen, it's been, I can't believe it's been 20 years, but she has a similar moment where you're watching realization and just grief breaking on her horizon in The Sixth Sense.
Yes. Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Yeah,
that's how long it's been. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm tempted to go back and rewatch that since it's going to be a little more uplifting than this, but I absolutely can't recommend this enough. It's, if not the best thing that I've ever watched for The Blotter, it's in the top five, absolutely. It's rough going. It is rough going. There may be triggers present, but...
Oh, for sure, yes.
If, you know, I'm not saying that you should try to get through it anyway, obviously, but everything that people are saying is true. It's legit. This is great. And in a year, we're going to be talking about how it won a whole bunch of shit at the Emmys, as we should.
Yep.
Well, in our second most watched section, it's not eligible for Emmys. Is
Thank
one
God.
Thing. Okay, so we were looking at, I think we'd maybe picked the wrong podcast.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, y'all, this was my idea, and I apologize.
Look, it's Sports Criminals, the other vaguely named property we're talking about today. It's the latest podcast, I think the latest. Parcast has so many that who knows where we are in the Parcast timeline. Here's the case file adapted very slightly from Wikipedia of the first couple of episodes. The podcast dropped, I think, the first week of September. There's new ones every Thursday. They begin with Oscar Pistorius. Quote, Pistorius is a leading South African runner who won attention as an athlete with a disability competing at a high level, including at multiple Paralympic Games and the 2012 Summer Olympics. Reva Steenkamp, a model, was Pistorius' girlfriend. In the early morning of Thursday, 14 February 2013, Steenkamp was shot and killed by Pistorius at his Pretoria home. Pistorius acknowledged that he shot Steenkamp, but said that he mistook her for an intruder, end quote. This case, you know, this has been tried. This has been adjudicated. Sentence was handed down. The charges were revised. The sentence was revised. You are far better off Googling Pistorius Vanity Fair than listening to even 8 seconds of Sports Criminals. I don't know how many episodes they're going to devote to it. Like I said, two have dropped. I got through one. Here's the thing about Parcast content generally. It's just not for me. It's not like a style of discussion podcast that I enjoy. That doesn't necessarily mean in the case of other topics like con artists or unsolved or what have you, that it's not good. It's just not for me. Sports Criminals is not good.
Sports Criminals is not good. I think I know less about Oscar Pistorius now, having listened to that podcast, than I did before I listened to the podcast.
I know less about everything. I'm dumber. I'm shorter. I'm just kidding. It's not actually that bad, but it's pretty bad and like weirdly bad.
It's weirdly bad, yes. And it's basically because it's these two dudes reading from Wikipedia.
Kind of, yeah.
That's the podcast.
And it really does sound like two dudes who are reading it.
Yes.
And that's kind of all there is. I mean, structurally, first of all, it's quite melodramatic without being suspenseful.
Right.
They wait almost 3 minutes to even mention Pistorius's name, as though anyone who was listening to this didn't click on it because it's about Pistorius.
Right.
So like, but the South African in lane 5, like, whose name was Oscar Pistorius? Just get to the fucking fireworks factory. Shit.
Yes. Ugh. We already know.
Yeah. Also, we're not like part. His life is not uninteresting, but this is not a track and field pod.
No.
This is a crime pod. I mean,
it's called Sports Criminals.
Yeah.
Not Sports Childhoods.
Yeah, no.
So.
And there's really not, I mean, I think we've all been spoiled by, you know, better podcasts, including ones from Parcast. Like, it really is just the two guys. There's no, I mean, I'm not a big fan of, like, the audio actor reenactments this network sometimes does, but this needed some terrain in the story, like more clips from like audio footage of his races, interviews, something. It just was very dry. And on top of that, the writing itself, like this.
It, yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, it's so, so, so boring. I was wishing for them to do like some, you know, extemporaneous gossiping, which I hate on podcasts.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, talk about something interesting.
I don't know. I wonder though, now I'm concerned that I've been unfair in terms of the writing, because you said that it sounds like they're reading a Wikipedia entry. And I do think it's possible that whatever they are reading from was like originally written in Afrikaans.
Maybe.
And that's why some of the locutions sound like they were, like their, assembly instructions, like you and I were saying on text before. That you're like, no, instructions are usually clearer than this. I'm like, well, with IKEA, you get a little picture.
You get a little picture.
And the smiling guy.
I mean, but that's not a good excuse, honestly. Like, if, you know, if you are going to write and read a script for a podcast, then it should be clear to the people that you're reading to.
I mean,
honestly,
it just, I have a couple of clips.
Sure.
I mean, whenever something isn't how we use a given expression, drink, like, don't, please don't, you'll die. Here's clip 8.
He pursued the world with an energetic thirst for adrenaline, climbing and falling from trees, launching himself onto motorbikes, racing his brother's go-kart so fast down a hill that the pair had to use one of Oscar's prosthetics as a brake.
It was moments like these when Oscar considered his differences the most as a child. He did not feel pain as his manufactured leg ground ferociously against the gravelly road.
Nope.
Yet something else became apparent about Oscar's attitude. He carried with him a sort of reckless abandon.
No.
An attitude of jump first, ask questions later. This type of daredevil persona is accepted in the sports world.
No.
In fact, it's encouraged. But for Oscar, it would string together a series of unchecked behaviors that culminated in a tragic death.
Like, is just not how the English language works. Like, all of those are sort of familiar expressions.
Right.
But it's like,
but
this
they're
is
not
strung together behaviors. Properly.
It just occurred to me. It sounds like they're doing two parts of a little golden book, kind of. Like, they're trying to make it sound like really, really interesting and failing.
Yeah. And oh my gosh. Yeah. And yeah. I think it's also that, and you know, you do see this sometimes that people are like, well, we can't use this simple direct word again. So right-click, synonym, and then they don't read it out first. Like, ferociously is not quite right. He's not stringing together behaviors. Like, you don't carry a persona with you. Like, it's just very weird. Yeah. It just reminds me of reading, midway through Patricia Cornwell's most famous period. That it's like, nobody even fucking looked at this, did they?
No.
Like, line of dialogue, she quietly spoke. Like, just say she said. Elmore Leonard actually does know better than you.
Exactly.
Oh, all right. Here's our last clip, which is short, but they cram a lot of...
weirdness.
They cram a lot of Starman into a short amount of time. Clip 9.
Sheila began excessively drinking as a way to subside the turmoil of single-handedly raising 3 children.
Subside the turmoil? Name of my sex tape? I mean, look, now it's becoming a pile-on.
I kind of feel bad a little bit.
Yeah, I tried to, like, I spot-checked episode 2 to see if matters improved, but between some very weird thesaurus-adjacent choices, some, I'm going to say, unrehearsed-sounding reads that, like, this doesn't sound very natural, even though... I also would struggle with this diction, but because it's incorrect, but it just sounds a little flat. There's no like tension or momentum in the narrative, and 45, 48 minutes.
Yeah.
Just to
you can't do that.
Get to when he meets Reva Steenkamp is, y'all, this is peak podcast. You can't be fucking around. And you, Parcast, who are, you're the dream.
Yeah.
Build a network, exactly. Sell it. Cool.
Right.
You know, I just think. Yeah. And you have some, one of the hosts, Carter Roy, is on like 15 of Parcast's kabillion podcast,
really?
And maybe just as like, I'm not even gonna look at it first, and good, you know, good for you, boss,
right?
Whatever,
get that paycheck, baby.
Yeah, you know? But this is not this is not worth your time. I can see that some people who, like, even if you like podcast content as a genre more than I do, I just think this is not efficient,
right? And I wanted it to be so good because 2 things I really love in the world are sports and criminals.
Yeah.
You know, it could be so good.
Yeah.
But.
And this story is really insane, but I think it's actually like a single 50 to 55 minute narrative.
Yeah.
With.
There's no reason this Oscar Pistorius should have been 2 episodes. It could have been 1 45 minute episode.
Yeah. Unless you're actually investigating, which is not what this podcast is doing. It's
just regurgitating.
Yeah, exactly.
So, well.
Yep. All right. Well, readers, listeners, whatever you are, we hope we saved you from this. In this case, you should be readers. Like I said, I'm pretty sure Vanity Fair's coverage is exactly what you want if you want to immerse yourself in this case. Speaking of immersion, Annabeth, where else can listeners find you and your works and days?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at abchao, A-B-C-H-A-O. I do not post interesting things, so don't follow me.
I don't think that's true, but I also try not to disagree with Annabeth. Don't do it. That's what she'd say.
Nope. Don't do it.
Thank you so much for coming back on the podcast, PL.
You are welcome. It was fun.
Coming up on The Blotter Presents, Toby Ball returns from the roof on two new podcasts, Motive and Unraveled, Snowball. And we're taking requests. To entertain herself during a cross-country road trip, Eve Beatty has vowed to binge a true crime podcast every day she's on the road, writing a review that night that will run in the next day's issue of our Best Evidence newsletter. Send your recommendations to us via Twitter at Blotter Presents or email at editorial@the-blotter.com. And make sure you subscribe to Best Evidence by October 1st to read Eve's reviews. That's bestevidence.fyi. Until then, if you've got a tip for The Blotter Presents, like I said, you can find me on social media, Blotter Presents, on Facebook, Twitter, and the Gram. And, of course, at bestevidence.fyi, where if we have 2,000 paid subscribers by next summer, we will cover the Theranos trial in person. If you like the podcast, please tell a friend and rate it on iTunes so other listeners can find us. My guest has been Annabeth Chow, and she's on Twitter at abchow. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I confidentially inform you that I hope you'll tune in next time.